On the line now I have Laura Duggan, and she's a nurse and she recently worked as a volunteer with MSF in Nigeria. Good morning, Laura. How are you?
I'm very well, Noel. Thank you. How are you?
Okay. When did you get back?
I'm back since the end of November time. So I've had a nice little run off of the Christmas, about a month and a bit off.
Okay. I just want to ask you something now. Is your first time over there? I'm really interested in your very, very first impressions on the day you arrived before I ask you anything else.
I ended up having about 11 hours in the airport in Abuja waiting to get my connection flights because of delays and stuff like that. So I had a long time to sit in the airport and watch the world go by, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, the first impressions were that it was a lot wealthier than I had imagined it was going to be. But then I suppose when you're sitting in an airport, you've got people that are using, air transport maybe aren't the people that are, you know, that I was out there to look after anyway.
Mm-hmm. And what made you, how did you get involved in the MSF and make it decide to go there?
Well, it's been a long time. Like, it's, I've been thinking about working in the volunteer sector. I've been out to Haiti a couple of times with another organisation on short sort of missions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once I'd done those, I said, that's it, I'll definitely go ahead and apply to MSF. But to do it, I had to go to London, I had to do a diploma in tropical nursing, I had to, you know, they wouldn't even consider you for a job until you had those sort of qualifications.
So it's a lot of preparation and protocol before you even get involved
with it. Yeah, and a lot of commitment as well, like, you know, I had to move over to London to do that course for kind of 6-7 months, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wouldn't change it now. Looking back, I'm delighted with myself that I'm, you know, qualified to go and work in emergencies or work in areas of need.
Mm-hmm. Does it enhance your CV in any way?
I don't know about that now. Mm-hmm. From the point of view of getting a job in Ireland, I suppose, you know, they'll look at it kindly that you're kind of, I suppose, talking about charitable work and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose like you're working in areas where resources are very poor and very low.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're able to manage to do the job that you need to do, it's going to be a good thing for your CV.
And the long hours as well, I suppose, are comparable.
Yes, exactly. Long hours, no breaks, no opportunity to go down and sit in the pub and relax or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen.
I remember I worked in the Blackrock Clinic around 88, 89. I remember talking to a nurse in ICU and she was going over. God, I can't remember where she was going, but she was doing something similar.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to her, why are you doing this? Like, you've a steady job, a great job in the Blackrock Clinic and that. And she said she didn't feel satisfied in the job she was doing and she wanted to do something more challenging. Would that have been part of the equation for you?
Yeah, I suppose it would be. Like, it's kind of, I see it as I'm kind of available. I have skills. You know, I'm quite interested in seeing how other kind of countries and other people live in other countries. And, you know, why would I not go and do it when mm-hmm. I have the opportunity, the time, the skills to do it, you know? So that's my reasons. It's like, why not?
Mm-hmm. Did it change your perspective? I mean, you worked in St. Vincent's Hospital here, which is quite a busy hospital as well.
Yeah.
Did it change your perspective on life and stuff like that?
Well, I don't know if there's... It's very hard to compare the two. You know, I was working in ICU in Vincent's as well, and, you know, each bed there has a flat-screen TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of go out to hospitals in Nigeria where there's not even electricity. You know, you go down at night time and you have to bring your torch down with you at night time if you want to be able to see the patient or examine the patient, you know. So it's hard to compare the two of them. I'd say it would definitely change your perspective on things.
And what sort of illnesses were you dealing with? Well, the main one was cholera, I believe.
Yeah, it was all cholera. Cholera is basically a bacteria that gets into your bowel and causes the cells in the bowel to lose their fluid. So you have patients coming in with like a sudden onset of very watery diarrhea. If it's not, if it's a severe case and it's not treated properly, they can die of dehydration in like 2 or 3 days' time. So it can be very sudden and very severe. But the treatment for it is very simple. It's just, you know, intravenous fluids. And you kind of would encourage them to drink large volumes of, like, a solution made up of salt and sugar. And by doing that, hopefully, you'll reinstate their kind of their level of hydration, and they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, cholera is you know, I think you've probably heard of cholera.
I was going to ask you, would it be right in saying that it was a death sentence many years ago?
Yeah, it would be. Like, definitely. And it's all related to, like, poor environmental kind of sanitation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get it here because we have water treated, we have, you know, the opportunity to wash our hands, all our drinking water is treated, you know. So we wouldn't get it here, but they get it there every year it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Previous year now, I think they had treated about 15,000 cases of cholera. And this year, by the end of the season, I think it was 8,000 or 9,000. So, you know, it's kind of a constant recurring problem that kind of the local governments are struggling to react to every year. So we were trying to encourage, you know, support them in their ability to respond and to learn how to kind of respond to it again next year.
Mm-hmm. And sort of, if you use, pardon the expression, like, and to an extent, you sort of had pop-up tents where you could put them up, and it worked quite effectively.
Yeah, it did. In certain areas, we had certain responses. We didn't have any kind of hospital ward that we could kind of take over. We threw up tents, and you know, we made sure that it's quite important to kind of control access to the tents or to the ward where you are, because it's so contagious, the cholera, that if you have everybody coming in from the village to see their friend or their relative, they'll just bring it back to the house with mm-hmm. them, and then they'll get sick. So we had a lot of kind of we had a little, like, security man that would do all the spraying. He'd spray everybody with chlorine as they came in and make sure that they wash their hands going in and going out. So a lot of jobs required, like a lot of HR. We needed a lot of cleaners, a lot of nurses, a lot of everybody to keep the thing running smoothly, you know.
Mm-hmm. And one amazed me, you were over there 4 months of him, correct?
Yeah.
And one patient in particular stands out for you, and it's a great, amazing story for a senior person.
Yeah, it was actually the first day that we, I was working with an Israeli nurse for the first 4 months, and we walked into kind of, you know, we weren't taking over the ward, we were there to support and kind of provide, like, medical supplies for free, and to kind of advise them and train them up on different treatment protocols. So as we're standing there being introduced to the kind of, you know, the ward sisters and things like that, this man arrives in carrying his father in his arms, and like, the guy is in his 70s, and, you know, your life expectancy in that area of Nigeria wouldn't be, you know, he was quite old for the area where he was living.
Mm-hmm.
So he had no pulse, and his, you know, eyes were very sunken, and his skin was, you know, he looked very extremely dehydrated, and it was just, you know, with no pulse at all. And we were like, well, okay, let's go for this. And within about 4 or 5 minutes, we had an IV, like an intravenous cannula in his arm, and we had him connected to fluids. And within about 3 days, like within about 3 or 4 hours, he was kind of coming around. And within 3 or 4 days, we were able to discharge him home to his family. And, you know, it was an unbelievable sort of situation where he was almost dead, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. And is it, can you be reinfected as such, as recontaminated, I should say, if you get it? Is it like the measles, that once you got it, it's gone, or can you be...
You get immunity for the period of time that outbreak is happening, but then next year you could be at risk again. If it's a different strain of the bacteria, you could be at risk again.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll cover you for the period of this cholera outbreak, but it won't cover you probably for next year.
Okay, well, there's no comparisons, of course, between the hospitals there and what we have here.
No.
And electricity would have been out. You were talking about using torches there, but you had a sort of novel way of communications to let people know that the MSF were in town. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we had These are kind of like, they're called town criers, and each town would have its own little set of town criers. So we'd go to the local government and we'd say, have you got some guys for us? And they said, yeah, we'll organise some for you tomorrow. So they'd turn up with 10 guys on motorbikes, and the motorbikes would be given, each guy would be given an area to drive around in the town or the local, like, surrounding areas. And we'd give them a megaphone and kind of maybe four or five simple kind of health messages that they needed to deliver to their community. And off they'd go, they'd drive off and they'd be shouting out of their megaphone saying, you know, make sure to boil your water. If you've got any symptoms of, you know, cholera, and these are the symptoms, come to the hospital immediately. Treatment is free. And, you know, they were great. It was brilliant. Like, especially if we could get them to do it on market days, when there was loads of people in town, like, there'd be, you know, a quadruple the number of people that would normally be in town. If you got them there, that'd be brilliant, because they'd go back out to their communities then that we wouldn't be able to reach.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd spread the kind of message for it. So very effective, you know.
And just to stress to our listeners that when you talk about letting them know about the hospitals being there, you were talking about the tents that you had set up in the area.
Yeah, well, in some responses, we'd set up a tent in the grounds of the hospital. And in other times, we would, like, we'd work with the guy that ran the hospital, and he would kind of make a room, like a ward, available for us. So it could be tents, or it could be within the structure of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, you know, again, the idea for us was that we were working with the Ministry of Health, who ran the hospital, and we were working with the local government, the health director there. And the idea was to try and, like, increase their kind of capacity to cope with this again next year, you know,
mm-hmm.
that they understood how to manage it, where to manage it. So if we were going in with tents all the time, you know, they mightn't have the tents next year.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed to be able to work it in and structure it within their own kind of hospital, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they were great. They were, you know, they were delighted to see us coming. And, you know, there was one response that we handed over in COCO, and, like, we worked very well with everybody in that team there. They were very proactive, and, you know, they had sought us out almost to come and help them because they had such a big problem with the cholera. And when we were leaving, they were so grateful, they were so thankful. Like, the Emir, who would be the head of the local kind of religious kind of advisor, he was saying, you know, that he was going to put our names on the walls of the mosque to, you know, thank us that the COCO could never forget what the people in MSF had done for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'd be bringing tear to your eye, you know, very emotional, mm-hmm. sort of, to hear that after kind of busting your gut for, you know, a month or two there with those people. And
it was much appreciated.
Yeah.
They realised the enormity of what was happening.
Yeah.
Can I say there, when you say you brought tear to your eye, but you brought some smiles to their faces in your efforts to be able to communicate and learn the language.
Yeah, I did. It wasn't... The language that they're speaking up northwest Nigeria is Hausa. And, you know, you have to pick up some bits and pieces as you're going along, or else, you know, it's going to be twice as hard to do the job. So I could probably do a basic kind of assessment on an admission on a patient in mm-hmm. Hausa. But if they answered anything kind of unusual, I'd have to get somebody else to check with, you know. But with the water, we were just trying to get them to drink water all the time, to get them rehydrated. The sooner they drank that, the sooner we could, you know, discharge them safely and get room for other people to come in. So to drink water frequently in Hausa is Sharua Sose Sose. And I would just go marching up and down. Like, if I had a minute, I'd go marching up and down the wards just shouting that out. And they'd all be laughing, you know, because I'm sure I wasn't pronouncing it right or saying it right. But it would give them a laugh, and then at least they'd, you know, they had the gist of what I was trying to say to them. So they'd all have a drink of water after that.
Okay, well, as you said, they're walking long hours, and the conditions being very basic, and but you were getting the walk done. So what sort of things would you do to relieve stress and whatever frustrations you may have felt?
Yeah.
Did you have any time to do it anyway?
Well, sometimes, you know, you'd have very high periods where work was just totally, there was nothing to do but work. And then as the cholera outbreak would ease off, you know, as it would slow down a little bit, you'd have a little bit more time. Like, it depends. Each response was different. On the last response, I got to come back up to Sokoto, which was the capital that our team were based in, we got to come up every weekend. So in that case, it was amazing because you were totally detached from where you were, and you were able to relax. You were able to watch some TV. You were able to play, like, we had a dartboard, so we were able to play a couple of games of darts, and that was a big thing. Like, that was a big thing to get up. Mm-hmm. But other times we weren't able to get away at all. So,
and are your living conditions, Laura?
Yeah, like, again, they varied. But on the last response that we were working on, like, we didn't have a kitchen sink, we didn't have any running water in the house, we didn't have. Like, we had a small kerosene stove that we could boil water up on and things like that. Like, for a shower, you'd have to take a bucket into the shower and, you know, you'd use a little cup and rinse yourself off with that. And it was very, very, very hot. So you had no air conditioning or, like, it wasn't, mm-hmm. It definitely wasn't a holiday anyway.
What about food?
Food was difficult. We had a woman, you know, you could buy chicken and rice very easily, and you could buy, like, these nice little bean cakes on the side of the street. We had a woman that would cook for us in a big kind of witch's cauldron outside the hospital. And we'd pick the food up and bring it back to the house. But, like, it was kind of very unusual stuff for me. There was a lot of offal and things like that. Like, there was one day I stuck my fork into the pot and picked out this big piece of meat with the skin of the animal still on it and a little bit of a hole in the middle of the meat. And I was like, I couldn't figure out what piece of the meat it was. I was trying to decide whether I'd eat it or not. And the other nurse comes in and I said, what's this? And she goes, it's like a cow face. So it was like cheek, a cow cheek with the nostril in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you'd lose a lot of weight. And...
And you sounded like you were more or less in an isolated area, no big towns nearby. So how safe and what was security like?
Security was very tight. The last place that we responded to, there'd been some abduction of some Italian construction workers in the previous year. So, like, we weren't allowed to walk anywhere by ourselves. After 6 o'clock, we weren't allowed to walk anywhere. We had to go in a car. We had to have... Like, we would have security kind of guards on the gate all the time, but MSF is very strong in not having anybody armed, so nobody had any guns or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But, like, I didn't feel unsafe, you know. I didn't feel like the people there were so grateful that you were there to help them, and they knew that you were doing, you know, word spreads quickly that you're doing a good job and that things are working. So, you know, you'd feel very welcomed. And, you know, there was a couple of incidences where there was attacks on roads and there was bombs. Then while I was there, Abuja, the capital of Nigeria, there was a bomb in the UN headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there was things going on, but I never felt personally threatened or anything like that, you know.
Okay, can I ask you something that may seem like a strange question, but I'm always curious because I've talked to a lot of people like yourself who's gone up and done this, something like this, for the first time.
Yeah.
When you finished work in St. Vincent's Hospital,
yeah,
at the end of an evening, or you finished work over in Nigeria at the end of an evening, was there a difference in feeling, satisfaction or whatever, or was it just a day's work?
I think.
Can you remember what you felt?
No, I think you felt more responsible over there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you felt like you couldn't really switch off. You had to be thinking all the time. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I suppose I had more responsibility as well, you know. So getting used to that and saying, well, look, who's going to be in for the night shift now? And do they have, like, lamps? Do they have torches down there? Can they see? Have they got enough supplies? You know, and worrying, like, it's totally different. Like, in Vincent's here, you'd hand over your patient and you'd go home. And I could very quickly, I used to cycle in and out, and by the time I'd gotten home, I've wound down already, you know.
Okay.
But here you're always, over in Nigeria, I was always thinking, always worrying, always sort of thinking about it.
And is it still in your head when you're, even now, sitting down?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird reality, isn't it? Because, like, Nigeria is on the same time zone as we are. Like, it's not an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours ahead or behind.
Mm-hmm.
So I often think in the middle of the day, like, well, look, they're going through the normal working day over there now at the same time as we're going through it here. So I think about the people I was working with a lot, and I wonder how they're getting on. And, you know, a couple of them have called and emailed and texted and asked after me. You know, it's they're still thinking about me and I'm still thinking about them.
And what's next for Laura Duggan?
I'm waiting. I'm over to London tomorrow to get some work. I'm on a career break here, so I can't actually work in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So over there for a couple of weeks, and then I'm waiting for a mission. I'm waiting for them to match me up with a new mission.
Like you're hooked now.
Yeah, I am.
I've heard that so many times, and it's amazing. I mean, I have to say, if I was 20 years younger, so it's something I often think about. I'd love to do, but I wouldn't have the skills anyway that you would have. But it's it sounds like a very satisfactory thing. To do.
Yeah, it's hard work, but it's well worth it. And like anybody that's thinking of volunteering, msf.ie, get on and have a look at them. You know, everybody's got something to give. You know, there's people out there when you're saying that you're thinking of going, like, there's people in their 60s and 70s that are out there volunteering, you know, so it's not completely knocked off just because you're maybe a bit older or whatever.
Okay, msf.ie.
Yeah.
Listen, congratulations, Laura, and I hope to be talking to you again in the not too distant future. Yeah. If you just stay where you are, just going to a break. Thanks very much, Laura.
Thank you. Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Bye.